Yes, thank you very much. Two bishops, two rather different answers to the question of Luther's future in Germany, and too little time. According to the schedule, we should be done in about 3 minutes. We might not be. I must say that Bishop Knut's remarks were very challenging and helpful in many respects. For instance, his, I think it's perhaps his distinctive Schleswig perspective of considering the lands of northern Germany, the lands around the Baltic, as the place where Lutheranism and its is most clearly embodied in its influence in the culture and society. That was very helpful to me. Many of us in the Missouri Synod have our roots further south, Saxons and Bavarians and so forth. So the North German perspective and the notion of the Baltic countries is something I'll have to think about quite a lot. I cannot engage his paper point by point, both because many of his ideas are still digesting in my mind, but more especially because the hour is late, the day is long, and the flesh is weak. But let me simply point to one or two of his ideas and points in his discussion of how Lutheranism, and specifically a Lutheran idea, the two kingdoms theory, has thoroughly shaped the social and political environment in Germany, and even without the American separation of church and state. He draws particularly on Luther's writing, The Freedom of a Christian, citing that distinction numerous times, that paradoxical vision that the Christian is the freest of people, subject to none, and also simultaneously the servant of all in love. And then he also combines that with the distinction between the two kingdoms to reach what I found to be a somewhat startling conclusion. He writes, "In this way, the gospel leads to the desacralization of politics and clears the way for the use of reason." It seemed to me that this desacralization of politics was to some extent equated with secularization. Am I correct? In the paper. But surely this can't be identified with secularization or secularism, which, as we increasingly see, leads precisely not to a thoroughly Christian view of society, but rather to the exclusion of theologically grounded ethics and theologically grounded principles from public discourse. It is somehow ironic and worthy of further discussion that it is in an American context, even with our legal tradition of separation of church and state, where political discourse can, and it most emphatically does, still invoke religious truth. And that's not always an example of what David Gelertner has recently referred to as Americanism, the fourth great Western religion. Sometimes it is, of course. Sometimes political religious speech is simply a different religion. But at its best, the invocation of religiously or theologically grounded ethics in political speech is a way of expressing the limitations of the claims of the state. And absent the theological grounding of our political ideas, the state has too frequently no boundaries in the claims it makes upon the individual. But that, as I say, is something I'd like to explore much further. And I can only say thank you for your presence here with us and for a stimulating and thought-provoking paper. Bishop Schoene's paper reminds us that it's not just a question of whether Luther has a future, but rather which Luther will figure in life and society in the future. Luther has, of course, long been something of a wax nose who is invoked and molded by a wide variety of theologies and ideologies. I remember as a young, impressionable undergraduate making my first visit to the Luther land in the former East Germany before the wall came down. There's probably a file about me somewhere in Berlin. How the government approved literature about sites such as the Wartburg or Erfurt identified Luther as a national hero, a sort of proto-proletarian leader, was all fairly ridiculous to me even at the time, but it's clear that Luther can be invoked by all sorts of people who have no interest in Luther as a theologian. Luther, of course, wasn't terribly concerned himself that he or his name be preserved or protected. He writes, for instance, by any consideration of body or soul, you should never say, I am a Lutheran or papist, for neither of them died for you or is your master. Christ alone died for you. He alone is your master, and you should confess yourself a Christian. So far, so good. But, let the other shoe drop, if you are convinced that Luther's teaching is in accord with the gospel and that the Pope's is not, then you should not discard Luther so completely, lest with him you discard also his teaching, which you recognize as Christ's teaching. You should rather say, whether Luther is a rascal or a saint, I do not care. His teaching is not his, but Christ's. Now, although I don't want to discard Luther hastily or completely, I do think that maybe it's a helpful experiment if we take seriously the weakness and ambiguity of Luther or Lutheranism as labels or symbols, perhaps especially in Germany's present and future. Maybe Luther is just too ambiguous to really be helpful to us if we want to retain Luther's doctrine. And since we do not hold any copyright on Luther, maybe we should consider whether the gospel confession, which we do want to preserve and strengthen, could be better preserved by some other public name, one which has not been compromised by this complex history from Schleiermacher to Barth to theologically empty Luther kitsch sold to tourists. So if Luther stands for the doctrine of Christ, then we dare not discard Luther altogether, lest we lose Christ in the process. But if Luther is no longer associated in people's minds with the doctrine of the gospel, then perhaps we need another symbol or label in the future. We need something that captures something or someone that can capture the profundity, the biblical piety, the eloquent orthodoxy of Luther, all joined together with that enormous power to engage individuals, to speak to the individual condition, but also to deeply and lastingly transform culture. A deep respect for tradition that is paradoxically combined with boundless creative freedom. I think this is a description of Luther's influence and his impact. And if we look around for some other figure, if Luther is reduced to t-shirts and tourists and empty slogans, then what else can we turn? Well, the same confession of the gospel, the same profundity, biblical piety, and eloquent orthodoxy, the same roots in tradition combined with boundless creative freedom, found also in Johann Sebastian Bach. I wouldn't object strenuously if we used not the name Lutheran Church, but Bachian Church. And for that reason, I think we can close the evening in the glad expectation of celebrating the biblical piety and profound, eloquent orthodoxy with Johann Sebastian tomorrow afternoon. Enough for this evening. Thank you both very, very much for your presence with us and for your contributions to our discussion, and thank all of you for your patience and endurance through a long day.